What is up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of 5% Project. If you hear some noise in the background, it's my wife just macking at some popcorn. And she refuses to stop while I'm recording, so. Anyways, today's guest is someone I'm honored to have on. We've tried to do a podcast for a while now, but we're both just so busy. He's a longtime friend of mine. He, since the age of like 16, 17, he started his own business. He's been running it for years, and he's always had side hustles too. If he's not at his business, he's literally working another job. This dude is just flat out amazing. So I'm glad to have him on. He can give a different perspective, someone who's actually been successful in business and running a company at such a young age. So without further ado, y'all, let's just get into it. I'm super excited. Here we go.
Boss lady. This is my I feel fantastic because I just woke up and this is my frozen cocktail mix.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Getting after it early.
But so I figured, well, first off, welcome to this. I don't know if I've ever told you about the 5% Project, but
bits and pieces, but never formally.
Okay, well, I figured we can do a quick little, because I want to talk about you, and I've wanted to get you in an interview for like 2 years now. But you do that, and then afterwards we can talk business and what afterwards for a couple
of minutes. Definitely.
But yeah, the 5% Project is Earl Nightingale from 1950s. A famous quote he had was, the opposite of courage in our society isn't cowardice, but it's conformity. I love that. So I like talking to people who are friends of mine who are just doing it differently, whether it be in their spiritual walk or if they're doing it in business or in finances, which I'm open to hearing your thoughts on debt today and credit and how it's played a role in your life. But for everybody out there, you want to give a quick intro to like what you do, maybe how we met and just a little bit about yourself.
Okay. So I do a couple of different things. I'm pretty diversified in what I do. I own an Amazon business, e-commerce business, which I started almost 5 years ago. And Amazon has changed a lot. I'm sure we'll get into that at some point. First started to now, you know, I've seen a lot of shifts. And so with changes in Amazon, I've decided to diversify my income and get into, I'm a commercial insurance agent now. So that's what I do full time. I've built my Amazon business to a point now where it runs itself. It's pretty self-sustainable. And so I check up on that a couple hours a week and focus my attention on big commercial, insurance stuff. And so me and you have been friends for what? 6 years, 5 years, something like that.
Probably like that. I think I met your Kayla just maybe a year before I met you. And that was a long time ago.
Yeah. It's been a while, man. It's it definitely feels like it's flew past. It doesn't feel like
it's been a pleasure though.
Definitely. And I get the pleasure of knowing your wife and you two as a team, so that's pretty cool.
Isn't she amazing?
I still don't know how.
I wake up every day, I'm like, I don't know how I did this, but I'm not going to talk to her about it because I don't want to jinx it yet.
I don't either. We're still trying to figure out what kind of like cult you're a part of or if you hypnotized her.
I'm pretty sure like there was a point where I was kind of looking into witchcraft when I was in high school. So so I actually just got off an interview with a friend of mine. So the one thing I think I love about you is a lot of people talk about how you should have friends in your life that are driven just like you are. And I mean, you're way more successful than I am. And I love that because it gives me something to shoot for. But I love the fact that you, even when you had still have your Amazon business and that was your main source, you were always still like, man, I think I should get a second or third job. I might start delivering pizzas just to have some extra income coming in. And And you're always talking about like how you should lower what you live on, basically. So that way, even if you made $150,000 that year, if you live off of 36, how much money can you actually save and invest and put towards another business? And that's actually the meeting I had before this was with a buddy of mine. I'm always down for when people want to start businesses or they're going off into their own thing. He's doing Primerica. So I don't know if you've heard about them, but it's along the same lines as like Dave Ramsey. And I thought it was really cool to just think about how, and I'd love to talk to you about finances and how you've kind of done that, but then how you do it differently than I do as well, because I know we fight a little bit.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, to the point, you are one of my successful friends, and yeah, it's one of those things that I don't judge success off of income, because even idiots can build a lot of income. But how you manage it and where your mindset is at, that's the determining factors of who keeps that success, who keeps that wealth.
Wise words, man.
You inspire me just as much.
I appreciate that, brother.
So
I love you too.
I love you too, pal. but it's crazy to look back now. You know, when you got your head to the ground plowing, when I was building an Amazon business, I never turned back to look at where it was. I was always looking at where I was going with it. And so it's crazy to look back now that I've slowed down on the process of building that business and kind of let it self-sustain, to look back 5 years later and say like, man, this has grown into something that, I didn't ever think it would. So
I have to, are you 21 now? Mm-hmm. So yep. I just had to make sure to say that, because from the people who are listening, like, you're 21 years old and you have a business that's self-sustaining already, pretty much, where you drop in a couple hours a week. And I don't know. I always thought that you had to be, which was mind blowing for me. I always thought that to run a successful business, you had to be in your 40s and 50s, build it up for like 20 years. And I've got you who built it up at the age of 19. I remember you were like, yeah, I can't come. I got to go into work today and work a 9-hour day to build this business. And another friend of mine is 28 years old and he's already a millionaire. And it's just, it blows my mind how like you just completely defied the odds and went and started your own business, started your own company and are still continuing to grow, which is phenomenal to me to be that young. So do you have any tips for people who are younger, who might want to start a business? Like maybe they want to start like a drop shipping, or they want to get on Amazon or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, it sucks. Okay. I have to, I started my Amazon business at 16, and I started building this. And so that's right around the age everyone gets licenses and gets cars. And so a lot of my friends were buying really cool cars, and I'm a car guy, so I'm really into them. And I went out and bought a cheap car I could pay cash for. And that sucked. That sucked so bad. And I never took money from my Amazon business. I always rolled it, and I'd work odd and end jobs to pay my bills. Living at home, you really don't have a ton of them. And so it's everybody, at one point, I remember at 17, I was making as much as all three of my friends combined. And they were driving $25,000-$30,000 cars. And I was driving my old Mazda.
I remember that beauty.
Yeah, it was dented and scratched, and it got point A to point B. It was a great car. I'm not ragging on Mazda.
Absolutely.
But had I not have capitalized when I did, be in the place I am now, with it self-sustaining, with it built to a point where it can retain, it's kind of a bulletproof, because what's happened with Amazon is a lot of sellers have funneled into this. It's been sold as the dream, invest a dollar and become a millionaire. And so because I sacrificed on the front end and didn't do fun stuff, didn't buy cool cars that I wanted, now I got in on the ground floor, established products, established brands, and I'm a little bit more insulated from outside sellers than somebody coming in and starting new stuff. So my advice would be, don't get into it to make a big salary in your first couple of years. Continue to reinvest, continue to live as if that business has made nothing, because those first couple of years are crucial in building a foundation for your business. And if you pull that precious capital away from it and don't allow it to grow, you're just going to stunt your 15, 20 years from now business.
Man, that is beautiful. if you had to, like today, I guess I'll make this a 2-point question. If you had to today either start over from scratch, or if you were to like completely like 3 times your business, whether it be in like Amazon, or I know you're in insurance too now, how would you do it? Like, would you do anything different from what you did 5 years ago, or would it be the same process of like do the business while working side jobs to pay your bills? And like, how would that work for you?
Man, it's hard, you know, they say hindsight's 20/20. I can look back and, you know, my first product lost like $5,000. That was all of my capital at the beginning. So
dang, bro.
I would say, hey, you know, don't invest in that product. And, you know, when you're rolling at 60-70% returns every year on these products, you know, $5,000 turns into a lot in 5 years very quickly. And so I would have advised myself not to do that. But, you know, that's the same thing as saying, hey, I'd go back and tell myself to buy a lottery ticket with these numbers. If I were to give myself a lesson, it probably would have been to probably work more hours. I worked a lot of hours on my business, but I worked 12 hours a day, 5 days a week. I had 2 extra days, which I know to some people is like, oh, those are days you take off. But now looking back on it, with a wife and a house and bills, that was time that I could have spent building up a little bit more capital and building things. So every time I talk to somebody that's 15, 16 and starting something, it's pretty much give your life to this right now and sacrifice, because it's going to play out. You know, if you're passionate about it and really, really put everything you have into it, it'll, you know, eventually work out. So.
And I think that's really understated too nowadays, like where people will tell you, oh yeah, you need to take time off. You need to. And I know when I was in college, I did that too, where I felt like, oh yeah, these are 2 days I need to take off. Like I need to take off and just to relax and chill and get back to the Monday grind. And I never realized until now where even on my days off, I'm working. And
yeah,
it's even harder when you have a wife. Like if I had looked back, like you're saying, and I would have done that and worked those extra days, like I would be so much better off. But I decided, no, I'm gonna take my time and relax. And now, even though I have a beautiful wife and baby on the way, it's hard making that work-life balance where spending time with her as well as trying to fulfill my dreams.
Oh yeah. 12s are almost impossible nowadays. I mean, I'll work probably 10 hours a day right now, 6 days a week. But now when there's somebody else that's demanding your time, something as relational as a wife, they have to have boundaries. And so Saturdays have become my do not schedule anything, do not do anything, unless it's with my wife or an event that my wife wants to go to. I hate the term. I really do. When people talk about, you know, if you love your work, pretty much when people encourage people to find a job that they love, I think that's too pushed in our society of, you know, find something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. You may never work a day in your life, but you're going to be broke. and to some people, money doesn't matter. But I look at it as if my job is not bringing in income, I'm working every hour that I'm not at work to save money and to find deals. And I'm working to rearrange my schedule because I don't have any money. And so that to me is work. I'm working all the time. I'm working a job and I'm getting home and I'm working to save save money so that I can condense my lifestyle into, you know, something very minimal. And I live on very, very little. I really don't spend too much money. But I definitely think not everything in your life is going to be rainbows and sunshine. You know, you may sacrifice at the beginning and do something you hate or you don't enjoy it, but put a lot of time at it, build a foundation in something that's going to last. And for me, that was my e-commerce business. You know, it wasn't the funnest thing, but at times it had its highlights. And now it's paying out and I'm having a ton of fun making money from something that I don't have to put any time into. So
that's gotta be great getting that check in and be like, oh, I did no work for that this month. And yeah, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I really quickly, I like to joke around and say, oh, I made, you know, $1,000 an hour this month. Yeah. When at the beginning, when I was first starting, I was probably making $4 an hour, you know, with all that I was putting into this, I was making nothing. And so now to joke, you know, hey, I put a couple hours in this month. This is how much I made an hour. When in reality, it's not an apples to apples comparison. But it's funny looking back, you know, at how many hours I put in to make absolutely no money.
Like, I remember, especially when even I started the book business that sadly, because Amazon, I had to give up a couple months ago. When I was doing that, people would look at me and be like, oh, that's never going to work out. You need to get yourself more hours of work. You need to do this and that. And it's funny to me how when I was having income actually coming in from that I could use and save and put towards stuff and reinvest into the business, like when people saw that it was actually bringing in something, they're like, oh, that's amazing. But in the beginning, they're like, you're not making any money. Why are you doing this? Or when I was in photography, man, my mom was notorious for, I would do as many free shoots as possible. I'd message people and be like, hey, I love your stuff. I want to give you some great photos. Let me do this for free for you. You don't do any work except show up and smile. And I did so many of those to where it got to the point where I'd have people calling me. Like even now people message me still like, hey, can you do this event for me? I'm like, not at the moment. And the work that I had to put into at the beginning to make no money, it sucked. But then it paid off in the end where I was going to people and they're like, hey, why don't you do this? I'm like, okay, it'll be $850. It'll be $1,000 for this event, blah, blah, blah. And the value that I got from that, from doing that work at the beginning, I think that was my favorite part, was being able to do that grind and excuse me, Corona, and being able to, and being able to legitimately just, I don't know. It's something about, I like what you said earlier, where you're talking about instead of finding something you love to do, find something you like to do and just do it. Like, it's not about finding your passion, but that fun that's in the work of building something up. So I bet looking back, there's probably maybe some regrets. I know, like you're talking about time, maybe even working more, but the fact you have a sustainable business is just, it attests to the kind of work you got to put into to get where you want to be in 5 years, 10 years, 20. So,
yeah. Well, and it's a lot easier now to do what I love to do. You know, I could take a job doing whatever I love to do, making no money, and not worry about it because I gave up, you know, 5 years that I really wasn't doing something, you know, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't like I had a burning passion. Like I loved, that's another misconception. You know, when people say that if you don't have a passion, for something, it'll never succeed. And for some people that is the case. But if you have a passion for, like I had a passion for building something that was going to last me, you know, forever. And so I think that was in real estate, Amazon, stock market. Amazon was just the quickest way I could build something. And so I chose that one and I went at it, and learned it inside and out. But something like I really liked when you talked about, your book business is you got to know when your time is not worth something anymore. And some people hang on to these side hustles for too long and just waste their time. You know, Amazon has gotten to the point for me where I've got an established brand, I've got established stuff, And it's really risky to launch new products for me right now because I'm starting over on a new product. And so I've got my existing ones. I keep those up and now I invest my time in insurance, which is a totally separate sector. It brings me a little bit more stability to my income, you know, rather than Amazon where, you know, things can literally change overnight.
That was really hard for me to cope with was failure. The friend I was talking about, he's 28 and owns a company named Azoth. His famous quote was, and I don't know if he stole it from somebody else. I just love that he said, 9 out of 10 businesses fail. So I started 10. Like, there you go. However many businesses you start, it took a little bit of a hit to my pride to stop that business. But in doing so, it opened up so much more time where now, as you know, I'm becoming a self-taught programmer and going into that field, which has been a journey in itself. So you're not wrong, brother. Sometimes you got to know when to quit.
Yeah. And not find, my thing is I'm more impressed by the person that started it and failed than the person that never did anything. And sat there, you know, posting on Instagram, you know, hashtag side hustle, you know, that they one day out of the 4 months their business has been around. I'm more impressed by the person who gives it everything they have and fails than the person who, you know, sits back and maintains their pride, you know, and never does anything.
And I wish people knew the schedule that it took. Like, I don't know if you've ever, you remember Andy Bermudez? So her brother-in-law and I were really great friends. We've got a podcast we do together. And then I've got this one too. And I've got another side business as well on top of doing Uber. And it hit me the other day how much he called me and he was like, "Hey brother, we need to step it up. So we're going to record twice a week." It's like, "I don't know, man." He's like, "I'm not giving you the option. We're recording twice a week." And we found the time. It's all about, like, it's not about posting once every week to Instagram saying, "Oh yeah, I went and sourced today for products."
Yeah.
Like every day you're going out and doing something. And I legit see that in you whenever I call him, I'm like, "Hey Dylan, what's going on?" It's like, "Bro, I'm working." And you eat once a day and it blows my mind how much work you actually put in, but kudos to you for doing so.
Yeah. Well, and there's stuff that I've done that's failed. I mean, that's the thing is like, you know, a lot of times, you know, my Amazon business can be looked at, you know, my e-commerce can be looked at as, he built this great thing. You know, he just got lucky, you know, but I tried 3 other things in the process of Amazon. I've probably lost 20-30 grand trying stuff that never worked out in countless hours of my life. And so I agree with that. You know, 9 out of 10 businesses fail. You know, start 10, you know, but a caveat to that would be, you know, if you start 10 and never really dive into one of them, you know, you just have 10 that you dabble with, you know, all 10 of them could fail. My advice is to pick one, put everything you got into it and know when to jump ship. You know, if it's not working, jump ship. You know, give it a year. If you're not making any income, I don't buy this, like, you know, just put heart and soul into it and it'll eventually work out. You know, that happens for some people, you know, and if you've got, you know, something that you truly believe in, stick with it. But if you're like me, where you're just trying to build something that would bring, you know, some income and didn't really care what it was, you know, Amazon was it for me. If Amazon wouldn't have been it, I'd have moved on to the next one. So that's kind of what was my mindset. And Amazon started to work, but there were many micro decisions I had to make because each product is almost like its own business. When you were launching products, you know, it was a standalone product in a different sector. So I'd have a sports product or I'd have a health product under different brands. And I had to be able to say, like, "Hey, I just give up on this health product. Like, it's not doing well. I put a lot of money into it. It's not worth my time. This product over here has a lot of potential. Let me shift my resources and my attention to this one And 9 times out of 10, that was the better decision. The worst investments I've had is where I've sat and fixated on one and tried to make my money back. You just got to be able to say, I've lost $8,000. It is what it is. Cost of doing business. What's the next one?
So you would rather, if you had a product that failed, or like even, or even like, we'll say a stock and going into like the finance field. Like if you're an investment, that's just, you want to do well, but you see that it's not doing, it's going downhill. You would just rather take the money out that you have left instead of taking more of a loss and just throw it into something that's actually profitable.
Okay. So this is where my philosophy shift. my investing strategy is strictly S&P 500 index funds, Vanguard.
And that is music to my ears.
And so I buy all of those. I do not jump ship. As you can tell from this downturn, were times where we were down 20-30%.
Oh, dear Lord.
Where everybody was saying, oh, it's going down 50%. Let's all jump ship. That is not what I'm saying. I don't know stocks well enough to make those decisions. I like to say I'm financially literate, but I'm not an expert in any, subcategory of finance. I'm not a stock expert. I'm not a real estate expert. Mm-hmm. I understand them and I understand the route that I want to take in each industry. But I'm not smart enough to train individual stocks, and statistics show the majority of people aren't smart enough to trade individual stocks. So I buy one, I hold it, and it paid off in this downturn. I kept buying all the way down to the bottom, which I never knew where the bottom was. And I rode it all the way back up. And now the S&P's at 3240. I think it closed at today.
Yep.
Up.
Okay.
A lot. So
Amazon, I see what you mean.
I feel like I know Amazon very well, and I consider myself an expert. And so I felt like I had the knowledge to say, this product is going nowhere. I'm going to jump ship. But my product is different from a stock. I don't run the company that the stock I'm buying is, that I'm buying stock in. I run the product that I'm jumping ship off. So I know all the ins and outs of, hey, this isn't coming back. It's time to move on.
Absolutely. So yeah, I see what you're saying. Where if it's something, especially in your business, you need to figure out whenever something isn't profitable for you anymore, instead of holding on to it because you really liked it, figure out a way you can reinvest that. And then in finances, especially if you're not an expert, like you're saying, sometimes you just, because I invest the same way you do, buy and hold. And like even throughout this whole downturn, never sold a single part of my 401k or my IRAs. And I think I'm up 28% so far this year. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you have to know what you're doing. Like if you are going to play these market trends, whether it's in real estate, whether it's in anything, you've got to know and be seasoned in that industry. And so I just don't think enough people know the ins and outs of us, particularly the stock market, and get burned pretty quickly on Tesla call options or crap like that.
So if I gave you $50,000 today to invest, what would you do? And I know you're also in a different mindset with being now a family man. Would you use that $50,000 to build up your own business and start trying to invest in yourself that way? Or would you invest it in the stock market? And if you did that, how would you do so?
I wouldn't do either. I'd go real estate, right? I'd prepare to go. I'm in both e-commerce and which e-commerce I consider a risky investment. I don't want to have all my money in my e-commerce business. And then I'm in the market. But my next play is my wife and I want to do real estate, buy a quadplex, rent 3 of the units out, live in one of them. So that's where I divert that money to. But if you told me, hey, you got to do something with it right now, and not hold it till, because I want to buy next year, I'd put it into insurance.
Really? Wow. Yep. Okay, changing the script on me, man.
Yeah. It's my e-commerce business is to a point where I have the money if I want to launch something. I'm a lot more picky on what I spend my time doing. And the market, you know, I've got a lot of money already in the market. And so I feel like that part of my overall portfolio is pretty satisfied at the moment. And so there's a gaping hole in real estate. And I'm pretty new to insurance. So I'm trying to build that up. So I'd probably spend that 50 grand on, you know, a lot of advertising and mailing campaigns and stuff like that in insurance if I had to do it right now.
Okay. So moving on to, because I know I don't want to keep you long. I know we have to talk just after this and I don't want you to get to your family. But there's two questions I want to ask at the end. But before I do that, I want to open the conversation about intelligent ways of using debt, because everybody who knows me knows that I am completely anti-debt, because I just know me as a person, debt doesn't if I have it and I'm like, oh man, it's okay if I spend 2 grand here on my car, and then before long I'm 10 grand in a hole and I have to dig myself out. That's just my personality. But I know that you've used debt, just like the Airbnb, when I was listening to how they started, they maxed out every credit card they had to start the business and then look at it now. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
So my parents did the same thing. My parents were small business owners. And so they maxed out every line of credit, every credit card they could get to start their businesses. And they just sold probably 6 or 7 years ago and it paid off. You know, it was a good investment. Debt is a lot to me like ice cream.
Okay.
Ice cream is very, very good. Unless you eat the whole carton of it in one afternoon. And so debt to me is very, very, a very useful tool. Unless you go off the deep end and start using it for things that don't produce income, that don't, you know, are assets. When you're using debt for consumer, you know, buying a TV on a Best Buy gift card or a Best Buy credit card or something like that. My favorite stance on debt was Graham Stephens. He's a YouTuber and he was mentioning that don't ever use debt to buy anything that doesn't make you money. And so when I was in it very heavily, I actually bought my first car in cash. A couple years later, I sold it. And instead of buying another car in cash, I actually used all the money I got from that car and launched another product. And I think that year that product made me $23,000, I think. Mm. And so...
And not to buy your own car again.
I was able to upgrade cars by using debt. You know, if I would have had to buy another car in cash, I wouldn't have had the capital to make an investment like that. So that's very risky. You know, I preface every time I say that I could have lost every dollar in that investment and I could have now had no car. I'm sorry. I could have not had a paid off car and have, you know, a car with loans on it, which I don't think is a terrible thing when you're investing correctly. So I strategically used it in that moment. But like you said, you've got to know yourself. I'm very, very disciplined. At least I like to think I am with finances. And so credit cards, I use credit cards for everything. They give you a lot of buyer protection. And we get, my wife and I get, you know, $1,000 a year, $2,000 a year back in cash back just for using a credit card and paying it off like a debit card. I'm against credit card debt, not against credit card use. So as long as you're not carrying a balance, a credit card is a very, very useful tool. I mean, I was paying my rent with my credit card until they patched and started charging me, you know, fees. At one point I was getting $40, $50 back on my rent every month because I was putting it on a credit card.
Oh yeah. Now they like, when I pay rent, if I don't pay from an account, if I use my debit card, they charge me like, I think it's like a $40 fee every month.
Yeah. And like, yeah. Convenience fee. That's my favorite term.
So what you're saying is basically like it's all along the lines of knowing yourself, but using it wisely. Like, so with the credit card, if you were to use it, instead of using it to buy your like TVs, your vacations, use it to pay your bills off. And then as you, like, let's say you build up your credit, for those who want to have credit, you pay it off every month, and then you get points on top of it that you can use, but you don't live for the points, right? Or is that like, cause I know a lot of people say, oh, I have a credit card just so I can get miles, and I'll spend $100,000 a year to get $1,000 back in miles. And is that something that you would go out and do that for?
I don't pursue points. So I don't have any credit cards that give me points on anything. It's all strictly cash back. Which isn't utilizing credit cards to the full potential. If you were to take sign-up bonuses, I just don't have time. But there's plenty of channels out there that'll teach you how to credit card churn. I look at it from a cash back perspective of, you know, I'm getting 2% on everything I buy with this card, you know. And honestly, if I didn't ever get cash back, just the buyer protections, you know, that my credit cards give me, is worth the use of them. The cash back is just a perk on top of that.
Okay. Well, I definitely see your perspective. I know I'm always adamant against debt. I can definitely see the perspective of it and how people can use it. And it may take me a lot longer to build a business as opposed to you did it in what, 5 years. You have a sustainable business. It might take me 10 years, which I guess is the big trade-off. If I think about it, if you're willing to take that risk, you might be able to build it a lot faster. Yeah. So I never really thought about it that way.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, everything's a risk. It's not using debt in any capacity, especially in real estate, is where I've diverted a lot of my attention recently. Cause our next big investment, we're probably going to take 60, 70 grand and put it down on a quadplex. And so I'm trying to, I like to spend a lot of time leading up to a big investment, understanding what I'm investing in. And real estate with a mortgage just always beats real estate with cash, unless you're the type of person that worries. You know, there's no amount of money worth, you know, keeping you up at night every night thinking about, you know, that mortgage that's got to be paid. But in my case, you know, I've got a lot of reserves in different places. A lot of stock accounts. I got emergency funds. You know, so I'm comfortable that if something catastrophic were to happen to my property, that I would have resources to get me through it to the next stage. So
you're not just like jumping in blindly. Like, I know a lot of people think you just have to dive right in. You've got your safety nets in place, and in case you ever, when you make that dive, if something happens, you've got a backup plan.
If you're the type to get analysis paralysis, where you just analyze something for years on end, always talk about doing it, and you keep setting these, well, when I hit this, I'll do it, or when I hit this, I'll do it, then you'll never get into it. Those people, I suggest you dive in, because even if you lose money, you've at least dipped your toe into real estate, which will eventually open doors in other ways. For me, because of the way my income is structured, and because I didn't start building credit quickly, I needed another year. So next year is when I'll get the most optimal mortgage rates and the amount that I want to buy a quadplex. So I would be buying real estate right now if I could, but at the moment I can't. So in the moments leading up till next year, I'm studying everything I can to make the best decision possible. And who knows, quadplexes are a very hot commodity around here, and there's not a lot of them. So, I mean, odds are I could be looking on the market for 6 months to a year before I ever find one that's viable. Yeah. So
I'm excited to see though where it goes.
Me too. It's it'll be my first foray into real estate. And so that's really what I want to divert a lot of my attention on in my early 20s, is building up some cash flow coming in from real estate. Because a lot of my stocks are focused on the long term. As long as it's all S&P 500. So I'm looking at that for my late 50s, early 60s. Real estate is something that I can get supporting cash flow now from, as well as building equity in properties. So I'm focusing a lot of my attention on that, and funneling every dollar that comes out of my Amazon business into the next property.
Beautiful, man. Well, I've got two more questions for you. They're very simple. I usually preface the people I interview. I'll send it to them beforehand, but I wanted to get your, I wanted to get your like actual reaction to this. So two questions that, and Earl Nightingale talks about in his books. He said, this is a question I want you to go to your neighbors and ask. And this is the difference between, the successful and the unsuccessful. Was, the first question is, what goal income would you want? Like, what would be your goal income per year that you would be satisfied with and say, hey, this is enough to get me by, pay bills, save, invest, and whatnot. And then the second question is, how much money do you want to be worth at the age 65?
Oh, man. That's hard. That's really hard. Because, you know, I don't spend very much money. I think we spend like, you know, under $50,000 a year, our regular bills. And we're happy. We found happiness in that. But a lot of things I'd like to do, I'd like to max, you know, my SEP 401 or my SEP 401k, her 401k, you know, a couple other things that right now, you know, $50,000-$60,000 in 401ks, it's just not feasible. So ideally, I think 200, I like to keep my income at 50-50. So I like to save 50% and spend 50%. Okay. And so right now, you know, with us only spending 50, we're at a lot higher of a percentage. We're a lot, pretty far over 50% saving right now. But that's because we're trying to establish some real estate here early. But eventually, I'd like to, I think 200 would be that number, to put away 100 and live off of 100.
That's beautiful. So I would love that number too.
Yeah. I think anything, I'm surrounded by a lot of people that make significantly more than that. And if you have a spending mindset, you'll never have enough money. I know guys that make $600,000 a year that are worth, you know, $10 and a high five. And I know guys that make $60,000 a year that are worth, you know, $3-4 million. It's just, it's really how you manage that money.
Okay. And then to that last question would be like my goal income or my, what I want to be worth when I'm 65 at the very least is 3.5 million is my goal. So for you, what is your goal at the end? Like to be able to retire, live, travel, do your thing.
I want to hit 10.
Okay. Deca millionaire.
I want to hit that double digit right now. With how early my wife and I got started with our IRAs, those should be right around adjusted for inflation worth about 3.5-4 mil, which means between now and then, the cool thing about insurance and specifically commercial insurance as an agent, is with the agency that I'm with, I own my book. So every client that I gain, that adds to my net worth because in insurance, your book is normally worth about 2 times, its annual revenue. So a lot of these guys have $1 million books and they're worth $2 million because they could sell it for that. So I believe that between now and then, between real estate and building my insurance book of business, that I could hit 10. And that's the goal. Not so much because I need, you know, there's the general consensus that you can live off of 4% forever, 4% of your portfolio value. And so I don't need $400,000 a year to get by. There's a lot of charity I'd love to give to, and people love to help. And I hope I have that freedom in retirement to just give. But for me, it's a number, you know, and I hope I blow past 10 million.
Absolutely. I think
you will. Right now. Yeah.
That's the goal. Yeah, man. I had a friend of mine, before we get into the business part, I had a friend of mine who I always thought like they lived very comfortably and always drove like the beat up pickup truck and whatnot, like you were talking about at the beginning. And we went over to their house one day and they're older. But I grew up with them and he'd bought this brand new truck and I was talking to him about it. And he paid for it with cash. I'm like, beautiful. He had just sold his business So I was like, oh man, that's great. He bought a brand new truck. I'm like, man, he must have done really well. And I was talking to him, I was like, how much did you end up selling the business for? And he's like, not what I wanted, but I got enough back. It was a little over 10 million. Like, and to see that, to hear that number out loud, it made it possible for me, like, to think that someone who I grew up with did that, and they're doing the things like you're talking about, where they did it the right way, and they jumped into it and did it with a financially sound mindset. It was beautiful to see, and I think you'll definitely get there, man. I'm excited to see it.
I hope so. But if there's one thing, you know, I've gotten what I think good at is making income levels a goal and not a necessity. Like, my lifestyle is not so big and so extravagant that I need, you know, to spend $200,000 a year. So it's really a goal for me. It's a thing of like, hey, I want to get there, even though I'm still probably going to spend, you know, 40, 50 a year on my, you know, bills and my living. It's kind of just, I want to see that number happen so that I can move on to the next one.
Beautiful. Well, Dylan, it was an honor to finally get you on a podcast interview.
Yeah, man. Yeah, me as well.